dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed this lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, the thrill of this year's thoroughbred horse racing season. I'm not talking about the fact that the thrilling, strong-hearted Smarty Jones made a run at being the first horse to win the Triple Crown in 26 years. No, I'm talking about the thrilling breakthrough made by the jockeys during this Triple Crown year. A group of them filed and won a federal lawsuit that allowed them to advance the cause of horse racing by, prepare to be thrilled, wearing corporate advertising on their racing pants. Is this a great country or what? It's not as though horse racing is a virgin when it comes to the corporate hustle. At the Kentucky Derby, for example, Ford is the official car and Crown Royal sponsors the official party. Also, the Triple Crown is now branded as the Visa Triple Crown. But until now, jockeys were logo-free, and the focus of the race was, well, on the race. But, claimed the lawsuit, if the stars of NASCAR and the PGA can plaster their outfits with ads, why not jockeys? It's a First Amendment issue, they told the court. Besides, corporate ads could be worth $30,000 apiece to them. This is Jim Hightower saying, you will be relieved to know, I'm sure, that not all standards of tastefulness have been trampled by this ruling. For one, jockey pants at the Derby cannot promote gambling, which strikes me as a bit odd, since the gamblers support the race, betting takes place right at the track, and the media openly touts the gambling odds and broadcasts the winning bets. Also, a jockey's corporate ad cannot conflict with the track's own sponsors. No Chevy logos, for example, at Ford's Derby. Again, a bit odd, since the case was said to be about free speech. Finally, the ads cannot be, quote, inappropriate. That's a bit vague, but I guess this would rule out promos for glue or horsehide furniture.
It's the Sticky Where It Hurts to Feel Well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy. Shoe Dog.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone. Our air conditioners with Purun refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound. No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. For a limited time, save up to $1,000 on select Carrier systems. Call 1-800-CARRIER for a dealer near you. Some restrictions apply. See participating dealer for details. Carrier. Turn to the expert.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, welcome, friends. 141 days until we figure out, is this nation going to return to democracy? Or are we going to continue moving in the direction of authoritarian... well, let's use the word in its literal definition, fascism. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet. 372 days since treason was committed in the White House, the outing of Joe Wilson's wife, 584 days since the search for weapons of mass destruction began. Tony Blair last week saying, well, you know, maybe we'll still find something. 596, and David Kaye, of course, saying, you're living in a fantasy world, Tony. 596 days since the anthrax killer struck, guaranteeing the passage of the Patriot Act. And 112 days since 9/11. So here we have the accumulation of time. A news flash here from BorowitzReport.com. John Kerry arrested for stalking John McCain. The Arizona senator seeks restraining order. Washington, D.C. police arrested presumptive Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry yesterday after Senator John McCain complained that Kerry was stalking him in an attempt to persuade him to join the Democratic ticket. Police officers apprehended Senator Kerry as he was shimmying up a drain pipe on the outside of Senator McCain's Washington townhouse, attempting to gain access to a second-story window. McCain said, John is a dear friend of mine, and I was flattered that he wanted me to join the ticket at first, but over the past few weeks, it's gotten downright creepy. Senator McCain said that Senator Kerry's courtship of him started as a series of friendly phone conversations, but then the calls started coming more frequently and often and in the middle of the night. After Senator McCain placed himself on a do-not-call list to fend off future entreaties from Senator Kerry, the increasingly impetuous Democrat resorted to more desperate measures, even disguising himself as a Domino Pizza delivery man. Now that Senator Kerry is in police custody and undergoing psychiatric evaluation, Senator McCain can breathe easy for the moment. The Arizona senator confirmed that he has requested a restraining order, keeping Senator Kerry at least 100 yards from him at all times. For his part, Senator Kerry told reporters that he remained optimistic about persuading Mr. McCain and that such a restraining order would not ultimately prevent the Arizona senator from joining the ticket. After all, he said, the president and vice president never really have to be within 100 yards of each other. Look at Bush and Cheney. So, from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. You know, the serious side of that is if Bush were to decide, you know, like the other day, he dumped Tenet. If he were decided to dump Cheney, and there are increasing indications that this will happen. I've been for the last year saying he's going to pick up Rudy Giuliani. It would be really interesting if he picked up John McCain. George Bush, that is. Now, of course, John McCain is very upset with Bush. You know, the push polls down in South Carolina where McCain won New Hampshire and he was on his way to winning the Republican national candidacy. Who knows? He might have even actually beaten Al Gore. I mean, you know, he's a pretty popular guy. Who knows? South Carolina was the make it or break it state. So George Bush's people down there, Karl Rove and company, got a list of all the registered Republicans and called them up and said, we're just doing a poll here. How would it affect your opinion of John Kerry or your vote? John McCain. How would it affect your opinion of John McCain or your vote in the Republican primary if you learned that John McCain had a black child out of wedlock? Or if you learned that John McCain had extensive psychiatric treatment as a result of his being a prisoner of war for 5 years? Or if you learned that Senator John McCain's wife was having affairs on the side and had not been faithful to him? Of course, none of these things are true. And they didn't represent them as true. They simply asked the question, how would this affect your vote if you learned that this was true? It's called push polling, something the Republicans have turned into an art form ever since the George H.W. Bush election. They did this against Michael Dukakis as well. Maybe the Democrats will get around to it one of these days. I frankly doubt it. I honestly think that the Democrats just wouldn't stoop to that. But the result of that was that so many people in South Carolina, so many Republicans in South Carolina, actually believed when they did polls later, asked them, that McCain had psychiatric treatment, that his wife was philandering, that he had a child out of wedlock with a black woman. That he lost the state. He lost the state. I mean, that was it. So, but I want to talk about economics in this first hour. I want to talk about the future of the American way of life, because I think that this is more important than any of the other issues we talk. Yeah, we can talk about Iraq. We can talk about America. And we will later on in the program. In fact, in the second hour, third hour, we've got some really interesting information for you on this. And you know, what's going on with it. And we can talk about the crimes of the Bush administration. I mean, we could talk about the crimes of the Clinton administration, for that matter, if you want. But the point is, and this actually, in my opinion, is one of the crimes of the Clinton administration, signing NAFTA and GATT. The reality is that the American middle class has only happened twice since Europeans first started, you know, occupying North America. And setting aside the, you know, yeah, a lot of Native Americans died from disease, a lot were killed. During the George Washington administration, the largest budget item was for Indian wars, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I acknowledge all that. But for a moment, let's just set that aside and look at the economic here end of it. From the founding of this country, or really before that, I mean, I just finished reading a biography of Ben Franklin, and it's a fascinating insight into what it was like during those times. And from the middle, early 1700s, really. I mean, you know, by that time they had cities and they had currencies and they had banks and you know, things were getting pretty stable. From the mid-1700s until just after the Civil War. Now, some would argue until just before the Civil War, actually, that the crash of 1854 brought about the Civil War, or certainly encouraged it, much as the Great Depression led to World War II. But somewhere around that time, there was a substantial middle class in America. Thomas Jefferson identified it. He called it the yeoman class. Yeoman, Y-E-O-M-A-N, was the phrase in the 1700s, early 1800s, that was used to describe a person who worked for a living. What today we would call really blue collar and white collar, although they there was a little more distinction. There was the mercantilists back then as well, people who owned little businesses. But basically, the yeoman class was able to take care of themselves. We had a middle class in the late 1700s, early 1800s, that was very much like the middle class we had between the 1940s and the 1980s, or the late 1970s, in which a single wage earner could raise a family, put their kids through school, make sure that their health needs were taken care of, and save enough money to retire on. Now, what drove the first middle class in America was land. Cheap land. Land was freely available. You know, anybody could get a 160-acre land grant. All you had to do was commit to farm it for 2 years. And so the first middle class in America was largely made up of farmers. And as the industrialization of America took hold in the 1860s, 1870s, the railroads, the rise of the big corporations, the John Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, the inventions of Thomas Edison bringing a lot of this about. The farmer class, as it were, the middle class represented by the farmers, began to shrink quite substantially. They considered themselves very much at risk. And what happened was, in large part, the banks had gotten so powerful. And the middlemen, the traders, the people who bought, you know, raw corn and, you know, from the farmers and then sold it out in the marketplace, had become so powerful that they were starting to drive down prices to the point where farmers could barely survive. And the middle class of America by the 1880s was pretty much wiped out. And from 1880 to 1935, there really wasn't much of a middle class. I mean, there was the recollection of it. But that, you know, having that land didn't guarantee it anymore. You might be able to provide for your own needs. You could be a subsistence farmer. But because of the manipulations of the markets, I mean, there were revolts around this. There were armed revolts around this. The Grange movement came about in the 1870s, 1880s as a result of this. This was where farmers banded together into these groups called Granges to try to sell their own products at markets. They wouldn't be at the mercy of the big corporations, of the big wheeler dealers. And the Grange movement, in part, led to what was referred to in the 1890s, 1900, 1910, as the progressive and populist movements, which said, basically, you know, we need to do something to get back the middle class, number one, and number two, we need to make this nation more democratic. And this, of course, led to, and they took these on as causes, these folks. They were the liberals of the day. Women should have the right to vote. That was passed in 1920, as I recall. The Senate should be directly elected by we the people. As I recall, that was passed in 1917. These were the result of 20, 30 years of struggle, trying to resurrect the middle class, thinking, you know, if we could just get back control of government, because government had been so taken over by big corporate powers that the theory of the populists and the progressives then was, well, you know, the women will go along with us. They understand the need for a middle class. And if we can directly elect our senators, we can reduce the level of corruption. But instead, we got Herbert Hoover, and his three huge tax reductions, and the disparity between the poorest in America and the wealthiest in America reached never before seen levels in 1928, 1929. Never seen before until just this last year, actually. And led to the Great Depression. Let me just, right after the break, real quickly recap what brought about the second American middle class. And then I want to talk about what's happening to it and what we can do about it. Because this is just critical stuff. And people just don't, they don't understand the history of it. And if you want to be able to argue it well with them and win the water cooler wars, this is the stuff you need. 20 minutes after the hour, it's Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and community.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I was riding the subway with 1,000 New Yorkers headed downtown. An old woman shoved over, she made room for me to sit down.
And welcome back. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire and armed guards like those that you find wherever George Bush or Dick Cheney are giving a speech. They heard the protesters. Those who might have a sign that says John Kerry for president. Anyhow, we were talking about the middle class. I just want to wrap this up. The second middle class in America. See, people think it's about economics. It's ultimately about power. The second, and that's what the Grange movement was all about. The farmers trying to get power back, and you know, the direct election of the Senate, allowing women into the political process, and it didn't it wasn't quite enough. And in 1935, Congress passed the Wagner Act, which created the National Labor Relations Board and made it possible, by and large, for unions to exist. I mean, you know, with the protection of government. And I won't say it leveled the playing field. It certainly didn't give organized labor anything close to the power that organized capital, that the large businesses have. But it moved it in such a direction that organized labor was able to say, hey, you know, we'd really like to have a 5-day work week. We'd like to have a 40-hour work week. Excuse me. We'd like health care. We'd like pensions. We'd like overtime pay. These were all things that came as a result of union activity in the 1930s. Teddy Roosevelt was promoting them in 1913 when he became a progressive and unsuccessfully ran for president as a progressive. But really, it was Franklin Roosevelt who made this happen. And that was the beginning of the rise of the second American middle class. The second American middle class came about as a consequence of two things. One was that we were continuing something that we had had for ever since the mid-1700s in the United States, and that was protectionist trade policies. That is, we said, hey, if you can make something in the United States, if you can make it overseas, and it's the same thing, and there's no advantage to making it overseas except for the fact that the labor is cheaper, we're going to charge you a tariff equal to the cost of that labor so that you will, I mean, you can't pass a law saying you can't make something overseas. But you can pass a law saying if you want to do it, when you bring it into the United States, you got to pay a tax equal to the difference in labor cost. So if you got a pair of shoes and there's a buck's worth of labor in them and you can make them in Malaysia with 10 cents worth of labor, then when you import them into the United States, you have to pay a 90-cent tariff. So there's still a dollar in there. And most companies would look at that and say, you know, why bother going to Malaysia? And that combined, and that goes back to Smoot-Hawley. Smoot-Hawley was a dramatic increase in tariffs in either 31 or 32. I forget which year it was passed. And, you know, people say, oh, Smoot-Hawley, it extended the Great Depression. Well, it did reduce our trade with other countries. But it increased the number of jobs here at home. So anyhow, it was a combination of trade policy, which, of course, the conservatives, Bill Clinton being at the lead of them, have wiped out, and the strength of the labor movement, which Ronald Reagan began the systematic dismantling of, but really goes back. The labor movement, I mean, you know, in 1947, 35% of Americans were members of unions. It was really the beginning of the American middle class. It stayed at that level up right through the 50s. But in 1947, Senator Taft, the multimillionaire son of the president, former president, and Senator Hartley of Ohio got together, or Congressman Hartley got together, passed the Taft-Hartley Act, and said that, among other things, for example, one industry can't join another industry in a strike. And among other things. And they made it just, you know, much more difficult. They created the so-called right-to-work option for states. And many southern states took this, and companies fled there, and it was really the beginning of the end. So point number one, I believe absolutely we need to be going back to these two things. We need to be going back to a trade policy that encourages the middle class and a labor policy. And number two, let's look at what the situation is now. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed the lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. So where are we at today? Well, in 1980, well, first of all, you know, keep in mind, 1947 was when the law was passed that really made it possible. Back in the 1880s, there were laws passed to try and restrain corporate activity. The most famous one and probably the most effective one was the Sherman Antitrust Act, which is still on the books. But in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan basically did two things. One, he stopped enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, so we had this mergers and acquisition mania, which included the banking industry, which is one of the reasons why Neil Bush ended up, walking away with millions of dollars, but his bank ended up bankrupt and lots of grandmothers lost their savings and whatnot. And also, he declared war on organized labor. I mean, you know, the PATCO strike was really, it was an event, but it was symbolic. It was really symbolic. And the con agenda has always been, I mean, going all the way back to Alexander Hamilton, the con agenda has always been one of essentially an aristocracy is a more stable and effective form of government. It's better to have a small number of very wealthy people who make most of the decisions than to have a large number of the rabble making decisions, because the rabble are unpredictable and you just never know what's going to happen. And you combine that with the main part of the conservative agenda, which is therefore the rabble must be kept in continual, well, as Alan Greenspan said, part of his job as Fed chairman is to maintain worker insecurity. And so now we see the conservative agenda writ large. I mean, they're not even hiding it anymore. They're not even trying to pretend that that's not what they're up to. And in an interesting piece, here's an example. David Moberg in these Times wrote an interesting piece called The Walmart Effect. And he talks about the Colossus from Bentonville, Arkansas, is becoming the template for contemporary American capitalism. And this is so true. Just as the Pennsylvania Railroad in the 1870s, the General Motors Corporation in the 1940s, Microsoft in the 1980s. These companies, however, those three all, by and large, paid their employees well. There were a lot of strikes against the Pennsylvania Railroad. It was before the Wagner Act was passed. But in any case, Walmart's low-road labor strategy drives countless other companies to cut wages and benefits of both retail and manufacturing workers and to buy more products from lowest-wage producers overseas, leading to what critics call the Walmartization of America. The Walmartization of America. And now people say, oh, you know, don't we have an obligation to, you know, help out these people in China, for example, by buying their goods? Well, in a minute I'll get to what the consequences of our trade deficit with them are, but no, we don't. We have 45 million people in the United States without health insurance. We have over 30 million people in the United States who don't know where their next meal is going to come from. We have half the middle class in the United States who has enough money to live for 1 month if they lose their job. Charity begins at home, is the old saying. Not only that, you look at things like the micro-lending movement that started in Bangladesh, where loaning $10, $15, $20 to local people to start their own local businesses. And this has invigorated the economy. Rather than us coming in and building a factory, and then, hey, when Burma says, hey, we'll give you labor cheaper, we dump that and go to Burma. I mean, it's really almost, racist isn't quite the right word, culturist, to say, oh, we must help them by letting them do our labor for us at 30 cents an hour. It really and truly doesn't help them, and it doesn't help us. And I'll get to why in some. So here we have this Walmartization of America. To local politicians, opening a big box store like Walmart seems a clear benefit. New jobs, more sales tax, happy shoppers, buying bargains. But actually, all it does is reallocate how money gets spread around. And while Walmart competition does lower prices, it also depresses wages and eliminates jobs. Again, is that the America you want? You know, if you go back to the Sherman Act, it said it's a felony. You can go to jail for creating a monopoly, for controlling a marketplace. And it looks now like the statistics are, pretty clear. Walmart is likely to control 35% of all U.S. food and drug sales by 2007. And I don't have the numbers on, you know, what percentage they control of just all, you know, retail sales right now, but it's mind-boggling. It is a violation, a clear violation in my mind of the Sherman Act. Anti-democratic, anti-middle class, and absolutely consistent with the conservative agenda. Well, 1.45 jobs are lost for every job that Walmart creates. Walmart is notoriously anti-union. A study done by the Orange County Business Council forecast that Walmart, just letting Walmart in Southern California, could cost California $2.8 billion in lost wages and benefits each year. Walmartization of America has a broader impact than just retail workers, said Greg Denyer, spokesman of the UFCW, United Food and Workers, Commercial Workers. Walmart probably has a more negative impact on manufacturing than on other jobs in the United States. Why? Well, of course, because they're buying from overseas. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to opine, if you'd like to weigh in on these things. Walmart, it turns out, is even pushing down wages in countries like El Salvador and Bangladesh. I mean, wherever they open a store, you see wages go down. And wherever they open manufacturing facilities, you see wages go down, ultimately. Not only that, they're getting $1 billion in tax subsidies. I mean, they're the largest, one of the largest receivers of corporate welfare, short of the defense and oil industries. To receive, you know, the oil industry this year is getting about, what, $17, $18 billion in welfare from the government. California alone spends $10 billion annually to subsidize Walmart and similar low-wage employers. A congressional staff calculates the federal taxpayers, that's you and me, pay $2,103 per year in subsidies for the average Walmart worker. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Richmond, Virginia is on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm sorry to be totally off the subject, but I think this might be the major news story of the week, war of the month.
The war of the month, all right.
Haaretz newspaper,
yeah.
Israel's newspaper,
yep,
is reporting that Reem Brahimi quit.
Today?
Over the weekend. If you go and Google it and look at the top stories, latest news,
yeah,
the story is right there.
Interesting. And what do you see as the, or what are they suggesting is the consequence of that? I mean, is...
Well, they haven't, they didn't, I don't think they get into the consequence, but they do say that he quit because of the infighting and not being able to accomplish his mission.
Okay, just for our listeners who don't realize who we're talking about, Brahimi is the United Nations representative. When George Bush finally decided to take John Kerry's advice 8 months late and went to the UN and said, please bail us out, they assigned this guy, Lakhdar Brahimi, who's a well-known, distinguished diplomat with a great, you know, long career and a good reputation, and a Muslim. And he went into Iraq to help put together this interim government. And now you're saying El Haaretz is reporting that he's pulled out. Let me do some research on that. In fact, I'll look at it over the top of the hour or during the news, and you know we'll see. It may end up being tomorrow's story. But thanks for the tip, Scott.
What's interesting is it hadn't been picked up by any of the other news sources, and it's been out since the first thing this morning.
Yeah. Louise just handed this to me. United Nations Special Envoy to Iraq, Lakhdar Brahimi, announced his resignation a few days ago during a UN retreat, diplomatic sources in the world body told Haaretz on Saturday. Though the UN envoy has not yet filed a resignation letter, the sources said a replacement for him was already being sought. He did not resign, nor did he threaten to resign, and added that his mission to Iraq has simply ended. Well, you know, maybe that's it. He's pulled together these people, and he's done.
I mean, that's not the story I read this morning.
Yeah, well, I'm actually reading from Haaretz. I mean, that's you know,
that was not what the story was earlier this morning.
I see.
It was there was more animosity in the story.
Well, it goes on. According to the report, Brahimi had been frustrated for some weeks, feeling he'd been sidelined by the United States in the process of setting up the Iraqi interim government. Approximately 1 month ago, it seemed that Brahimi was a key figure in shaping Iraq's future. The country leaders, as well as the Americans, were happy to hear that Secretary General Kofi Annan decided to send him to assist in the transfer of power. But you know, now he's apparently out. Well, this is one of those things where we won't know what's going to happen until it happens. I mean, you know, is it possible that you know, he had problems, but he has done his job, and it's now time for him to bow out? Or is this a, you know, the portent of, as you said, the war of the month of something really bad coming down the road?
And George Tenet resigned for family reasons.
Yeah. And his you know, one of his top assistants. We'll see, Scott. We'll see how this plays out. Fascinating stuff. Thanks for the call and the tip. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894, our number. Anyhow, I wanted to get back to this thing. Walmart, a 2003 California law contested an upcoming fall referendum, partly financed by Walmart, would require big employers to provide affordable health insurance for all employees. Again, this is, you know, a citizen referendum. This is the progressive and populist move. Citizens saying, hey, if you want to do business, if you want to do the game of business in our community, do it in a way that we can actually have a middle class. We can have a living. We can make a living. Because a middle class is necessary for democracy. Not to mention the obvious, you know, moral and appropriate reasons. So there's this Walmartization of America. Now people ask, you know, well, what does all this mean in terms of trade deficits? Okay, you know, Walmart is importing all this stuff. By the way, there's a survey, a poll that was done by Federal Times. Federal Times publishes Defense News, Army Times, Navy Times, Air Force Times, and Marine Times. It's owned by Gannett. And they just did a poll. How has the president's management agenda affected management at your agency? They were asking federal employees. Better, 3%. Worse, 91%. Unchanged, 6%. Small problem there in the federal government. But anyhow, what are people say? Well, what are, you know, if here you've got Walmart buying all this stuff, and what does it matter to me? You know, Walmart's bringing in this cheap stuff. Well, what matters is that there's this $500 billion trade deficit, which means that we're having to borrow money or give IOUs to other countries or give dollars to other countries for their stuff to bring it into the United States. And they got to figure out how to spend that money. And last week I just started reading this list. I think I got up to the C's on it. This is just in a couple of counties in Pennsylvania. It's very rare that counties actually publish these statistics. This is a 12-page document, so I'll read you some of the D's. These are this is in Butler County, Danieli Corporation, heavy metals and machinery. It's owned by folks in Italy. Now, why? Again, because our trade deficit forces, essentially, other countries to come over here and buy up our companies. People say, well, what's wrong with that? I can go to work for Toyota and make a wage in Ohio making cars. The problem with that is that the profit goes back to Japan. Well, I can get a job at Chrysler building cars, and the profit goes back to Germany because Chrysler's now owned by Mercedes-Benz. DBT Corporation, coal mining industry in Washington County, Pennsylvania. It's owned in Germany. Delta USA, they make sensors. They're in Allegheny County. They're owned by the French. Descartes Systems, logistics software, Allegheny County. They're owned in Canada. DHL Worldwide Express. I'll bet you thought DHL Worldwide Express was an American company. Nope. They're owned by in Germany. DMS Bliss, an Allegheny County company that makes rolling mills and associated equipment. They're owned in France. Dräger Safety, Inc., Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. They make breathing apparatus equipment. They're owned in Germany. Durham School Systems, they make school buses in Butler County. They're owned in the United Kingdom. And Dyno Nobel, Inc., which makes ammonium nitrate, which is a fertilizer, in Washington County, is owned in Norway. That's just the D's. We'll continue as time goes along. We'll do the E's. You know, every week I want to come back and revisit this. I mean, this is not just the exporting of American jobs. This is allowing this administration's policies are not just allowing, but requiring the rest of the world to buy up America, and we are becoming the feudal serfs. We are going back to a time of feudalism, of serfdom, and how many of these companies that are based in other countries have as their first priority to do anything in the best interest of either the United States or American workers? Think about it. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey there. You know, I was wanting to comment on the way Walmart's changed since Sam Walton died.
Yeah, his...
You know, 20, 25 years ago, I know that my cousin, who was a single mother, went to work there, and she said it was they gave her all the opportunity, and Sam Walton was this huge inspirational figure, and it was just a whole different culture.
Yeah, and they had a Buy America campaign too. But see, it's not it, the problem is not that Walmart has changed. I mean, that's a problem. That's a symptom. The problem is that the United States government under Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush had changed the rules of the game. Let you make your final point there, Chuck.
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, you've been talking about the sort of pathology of corporations, that all they care about is a profit.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that it was almost like a proprietorship that was structured as a corporation when Sam Walton was actually running it.
Yeah.
And it was very, very humanly oriented. I can speak from personal experience on that, and it has...
Gotta go, Chuck.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Courtship is a noisy affair for insects that wait 17 years for a chance to find a mate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. This year, billions of brown bugs called cicadas are making themselves known across much of the eastern United States. For the cicadas, all that noise is the sound of romance. Mike Raup is an entomologist at the University of Maryland. He says there are many kinds of cicadas, and the ones that are drawing attention this year are called Brood 10 periodical cicadas. They hide underground for 17 years and then emerge in huge numbers. They climb into trees by the thousands, and every one of the males will start to sing.
a large collection of chorusing males in the treetops could reach as much as 100 decibels. And just as a reference, this would be the sound level of perhaps a noisy lawnmower engine. So this really is quite loud.
Raup says males sing to attract mates, and they're equipped for maximum volume.
The sound is produced by a very, very ingenious evolutionary adaptation. There's a small membrane on the side of their abdomen just below the wings of the male. This is called a timbal. There are muscles that vibrate the timbal very rapidly, much the same way you might vibrate a drum head, and this causes sound. The other very clever thing is the abdomen of the male is more or less hollow, and we believe this acts as an amplification chamber to actually increase the volume of sound that's produced by the timbal organ.
6 weeks after the female cicadas lay eggs, cicada nymphs will hatch and quickly burrow underground. Raup says they'll spend the next 17 years sucking on tree roots until it's time again to come back into the open. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
In the back of a checker cab, stopped at a light, heading towards Broadway to see the latest critically acclaimed Pulitzer Prize winning play. And that's when I saw them outside the shelter.
Outside the shelter.
Somebody's baby.
Yeah, and now they're homeless and on the streets. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. You know, even Democrats, even in my experience, even most Democrats don't understand this stuff. It has become my team versus your team. You know, I grew up in Michigan. It was the Detroit Tigers. Didn't matter if they were good or bad. Didn't, you know, whatever. It was always the Tigers. And it's become my team versus, I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. And you ask people, you know, what are the seminal issues? This is the core issue of what's happening in the 2004 election and in the future. Not just not because I think John Kerry is the panacea to this stuff, because I don't. But it's a start. And that is what is at stake here is nothing more or less than the future of the American middle class. And the conservatives are hell-bent for leather to destroy it. And they got lots of nice little phrases. And, oh, we're making so many jobs. You've heard it from Limbaugh and Hannity and George Bush. Oh, a million jobs now we've made. Except they pay 27% less. And they may not even actually be there. And unemployment's gone down. Well, 80,000 people last month just stopped being counted. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to Jan in Arcadia, California. Hey, Jan, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
I just want to make a couple quick points, basically what you're talking about. The first is, it seems like this vicious cycle of stuff that leads to, like what you say, the Walmartization of the United States. Like, it's just, you know, they start off with things like the tax cuts on the rich and the decline of spending on services and things like that, which leads to, like, job wages going down. Like you said, like, $3 less seems like every new job that's created pays less than the ones that were lost, which leads to people having less money to spend, and so they go buy their stuff at Walmart because it's cheaper, get used to the lower prices, which also gives more money to the corporations like Walmart. And
right, and the winners in the whole thing are the multinational corporations who are handing big bucks to George Bush and his friends. I mean, that's what it boils down to. But you're absolutely right. It is a vicious cycle, and it's a vicious cycle that can be broken if we were to simply enforce laws that are already on the books and pull out of WTO NAFTA. So.
That's true, and also I think another problem is that people are realizing, or not realizing, that it's more important to support American.
Jan, we gotta go. Sorry.
www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed this lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The big money corruption of American politics will be on display at the national conventions of the Republican and Democratic parties this summer. But you can't see it without a ticket. A very pricey ticket. While both parties will portray themselves as heroic leaders for us common folk, And while the media establishment and its pundits will stay focused on their predictable speeches, politicking, and pageantry inside the hall, the real story will be taking place at high-dollar, invitation-only events inside exclusive clubs, restaurants, and other hideaways of the elite. It's in these places, behind the velvet ropes that screen out all of us common folk, that you can see political and money power ooze, schmooze, and merge into one. For example, maybe you've wondered why the banking laws of our great democracy are written in such a way that allow bankers to rob you and me. Such daylight robberies as their endless and always rising fees, so-called privacy provisions that let them sell our personal financial information, etc., etc. It will all come clear to you if you go to the Swank Rainbow Room in Manhattan on the night of August 30th, the opening day of the Republican National Convention. There you will see Representative Michael Oxley, chairman of the Financial Services Committee that supposedly oversees the banking industry. He'll be the guest of honor at a party paid for by J.P. Morgan Chase, Credit Suisse First Boston, and the other big banks that profit enormously from Chairman Oxley's willingness to legalize their robbery, banks that currently have bills before him to allow even more robbery. The banks are paying up to $100,000 each in tribute to the guy who writes the banking laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, why won't even one network break away from the convention hall to cover this telling political event? Like at the Academy Awards, they could call out the names of the politicians and banking moguls as they pull up at the Rainbow Room in their limousines. Now that would be good TV.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet, and who knows, maybe even into outer space. On a couple of different satellites here. Okay, we've had this contest going now for months. Ever since I first asked Colorado Congressman, I believe he is, Tom Tancredo, to name one piece of legislation introduced and by the Republicans and passed into law and signed into law by George W. Bush that had as its primary beneficiary we the people or democracy rather than corporate interests. And I got an email here from Shannon in New Mexico, and she says, okay, you want a law that the Bush administration has pushed that doesn't have major corporations as the main beneficiary. Well, that, keep in mind, that's only half of the equation. It's got to advance democracy or the interests of we the people. Anyhow, she says, my answer is Lacey and Connor's law. As misguided as this law is, I don't think that it has the best interests of corporations at heart. You could make the argument that it aids the prison industrial complex by convicting murderers of more murders, but the law really doesn't extend sentences over what convicts would normally serve. And, you know, she says, what do you think? Do I win a copy of We the People? Well, let's look at this. I got to tell you, you know, on its surface, it seems like a good thing. I'm the father of two daughters who are both young adults. They're both over 21. One of them is married and may have a child. I know she wants to, you know, one of these days. And if somebody God forbid, were to kill her when she was pregnant, I would be very upset. And I would have no problem with a law that said that if you kill a woman while she's pregnant, the penalties are greater than if you simply kill a woman who's not. But that's not what Lacey and Connor's law says. Now, in order to understand why Lacey and Connor's law was passed, we have to go back to 1873. In fact, we can go back a little farther than that. Before the Constitution was written, in the late 1860s, 1870s, and this is what Abigail Adams, when she wrote a letter to her husband, who was at the Constitutional Convention, she said, if particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a revolution. Well, why is that, a rebellion? A married woman was not allowed to make out a will because she was not allowed to own land or legally control anything else worthy of willing to another person. Any property she brought into a marriage became her husband's at the moment of marriage and would revert to her only if he died and she did not remarry. But even then, she'd only get one-third of her husband's property, and that third was decided by a male appointed by the court, an executor, who would supervise her for the rest of her life or until she remarried and determine how she used that one-third of her husband's estate. When the widow died, the executor would either take the property for himself or decide to whom it would pass. The woman had no say in the matter because she had no right to sign a will. Women could not sue in a court of law except under the same weak procedures allowed for the mentally ill and children, supervised by men. If the man of a family household died, the executor would decide who would raise the wife's children and in what religion. She had no right to make those decisions and no say in such matters. If the woman was poor, it was a virtual certainty in the 1600s and 1700s, that her children would be taken from her if her husband died. It was impossible in the new United States of America for a married woman to have legal responsibility for her children, control her own property, own slaves, problematic there anyway, but still, it was considered right back then for white folks, whatever. Anyhow, buy or sell land, or even obtain an ordinary license. So, 1886... The 14th Amendment passed and said you can't discriminate against people. And Susan B. Anthony decided that she would try this out. On November 1st, 1872, she cast a vote. First woman to ever cast a vote, Susan B. Anthony. On November 1st, 1872, 12 days later, November 12th, or 11 days later, November 12th, she was arrested for illegally voting. The judge, noting that she was female, refused to allow her to testify, dismissed the jury, and found her guilty. A year later, a woman by the name of Sarah Bradwell went to school and learned how to be a lawyer. And the bar then was very different than it is now, but she did whatever was necessary to become a legal lawyer, and she showed up in a courthouse, a courtroom in Chicago. 1873, Sarah Bradwell showed up in a courthouse in Chicago and said, I'm here to defend so-and-so. I mean, she was there to defend a criminal defendant. And the judge looked down from his bench at her and told her that he did not allow women in his courtroom and she would have to leave. And he threw her out. She sued. And it was, and this case was called Bradwell versus State of Illinois, and it was taken all the way to the Supreme Court, 1873. And in 1873, in the Bradwell versus Illinois decision, the Supreme Court ruled that women were not entitled to the full protection of persons under the United States Constitution, which includes the Fourth Amendment right of privacy. Justice Bradley wrote the court's concurring opinion, which minced no words. I'm reading now from the actual opinion in 1873. He said, quote, the family institution is repugnant to the idea of a woman adopting a distinct and independent career from that of her husband. So firmly fixed was this sentiment in the founders of the common law that it became a maxim of that system of jurisprudence that a woman has no legal existence separate from her husband, who is regarded as her head and representative in the social state. So in 1873, it was decided women did not have access to the Bill of Rights. Now, in 1973, Jane Roe sued over the right to have an abortion. But that really wasn't what the case was about. What the case was really about was, do women have constitutional rights? Do they have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy? Just as a side note, I with regard to abortion being legal or illegal in the United States and all, frankly, I don't think men should be allowed to vote on this. I saw a picture the other day of Bush signing the partial birth abortion ban. There wasn't a single woman standing there. A bunch of guys. I don't think men should be allowed to vote on that. But anyway, because, it's not them. So anyway, 1973, the case was really, do women have rights under the Constitution? Do they have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy? And there has been, ever since then, a concerted effort on the part of many conservatives. Now, some think that it's just about abortion, and abortion is terrible, and they need to stop it. In fact, probably the majority of them. But there's this subtext to it, which you found, if you listened to any of those guys, the Promise Keepers, who marched in Washington and talked about being the head of the family, and a woman has to be subservient to the man, and quoting scripture. The subtext to it is that women shouldn't have the right to make these decisions. And it's an attempt to, again, go back to this earlier era. Which brings us to the Lacey and Connor Law. If the Lacey and Connor Law, as I said, simply said, if you kill somebody that is either manslaughter or murder, and the penalty is, 20 years or life or death or whatever, but if you kill a pregnant woman, then the penalty is a little greater, or a lot greater, I'd have no problem with it. It would be similar to saying, if you kill someone in the commission of a crime, the penalty is greater. Or if you kill someone because of their race or their gender, in other words, hate crimes legislation, the penalties are greater. Again, I'd have no problem with it. But what this law did, the Lacey and Connor Law, first of all, specified that it didn't matter what the stage of fetal development was. In other words, if somebody had gotten pregnant the day before, now you've got implanted into the wall of the womb, by that point, 32, 64, 128 cells. If she is killed, then the killer can be charged not only with her murder, but also with the murder of that either A, cluster of cells, or B, unborn human being, depending on how you want to take it. This was sponsored by Representative Melissa Hart, Republican of Pennsylvania. The act was backed by conservative groups, and the argument was, let's protect the rights of the fetus. However, medical groups contend that by giving a fetus the same legal rights as an adult, the bill sets the stage for a court to challenge a woman's right to terminate her pregnancy. Pro-choice groups have agreed that the motivation of the bill is not to protect fetal rights, but to advance an anti-choice political agenda. And I'm sorry, I see this as part of, it's a wedge issue. This isn't the most important stuff out there, frankly. When people don't have jobs, they don't have health insurance, they don't know where their next meal is going to come from, we're at war. But nonetheless, I see this as something that is not only not advancing democracy, because in 1973, the Supreme Court ruled women have access to the Fourth Amendment. Because in 1873, in Bradwell versus State, the Supreme Court had explicitly ruled that women did not have access to the Fourth Amendment. This is why it's been so hard to overturn Roe v. Wade. It's not just about abortion. It's about whether or not women have the same constitutional rights as men. And this Lacey and Connors law is an attempt to roll that back, in my opinion. And so I'm sorry, I'm not gonna say that wins. I don't see that as the advancement of democracy, frankly. So step by step, you know, here we go, step by step, item by item. Uh-oh. It's our Bush Green Watch! Yes, the jaws of the Bush EPA. Bush EPA stalling on fuel economy standards while the Bush administration continues to promote a national energy policy favoring more fossil fuel use. Oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, defying widely accepted scientific data on climate change, underwriting oil exploration and drilling in wilderness areas with public tax dollars. The EPA is dragging its heels on revisions for tests that determine automobiles' actual mile per gallon performance. Cars are getting 14.5% fewer miles per gallon than the EPA estimates because the estimates are all based on 55-mile-an-hour speed limits and a whole bunch of other things that just aren't in the real world. And last year, the National Highway Traffic Safety and Safety Administration said, we need to change this. And the Bush administration and the oil industry... And oddly, the car industry, and I don't get this, you know, I think that organized labor in the automobile industry ought to be all in favor of improving mileage because it's going to, it's innovation. It's going to make new jobs. It's going to make America more competitive. But probably the oil industry is the number one thing. 20 minutes past the hour, it's Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges.
To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's tit for tat, but heck, you know all that. So when George number one brought in the big guns and chased me out of Kuwait, tried to set me straight, I arranged a little hit on that Texas twit. Well, it didn't quite work. I felt like a jerk.
Saddam's song, yeah. Along. 24 minutes. 25 minutes. After the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Bush Watch.
Lather was 30 years old today. They took away all of his toys.
Yes, according to news reports, President Bush will spend this weekend in Texas. For those keeping track, here's a quick cheat sheet. This is from Americans Coming Together. This is Bush's 33rd visit. Now, first of all, I'd like you to think about how many times you've gone on vacation. And I know they say, oh, no, he doesn't actually go on vacation. He gets work done down there. Well, actually, you look into it and you find that, by and large, he actually does go on vacation. He might have a meeting or two here and there, but he's out, you know, cutting brush with his chainsaw and avoiding the horses that he's afraid of. There aren't any on the old pig farm there that he bought. Anyhow, this is Bush's 33rd visit to his ranch since becoming president. He has spent all or part of 233 days on his Texas ranch since taking office, according to a tally by CBS News. Adding his 78 visits to Camp David and his 5 visits to Kennebunkport, Maine, George Bush has spent all or part of 500 days in office at one of his 3 retreats, or more than 40% of his presidency. 40%. Can you imagine? Boy, would I like a job where 40% of the time I was on vacation. 512, and that's, you know, not to mention the days that he's working raising money. When does the people's business get done? Well, as we're discovering, it simply doesn't. 512 out of 1,187 days he's been president, including today, or just over 43% of his presidency. 512 days is just over 17 months. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and I thought this was an exceptional story, and I want to share it with you. But now there's more to the story. And frankly, it concerns me. This was originally published by Doug Thompson, Capitol Hill Blue, on the 2nd of June. The title is Bush's Erratic Behavior Worries White House Aides. President Bush, George W. Bush's increasingly erratic behavior and wide mood swings has the halls of the West Wing buzzing lately as aides privately express growing concern over their leader's state of mind. In meetings with top aides and administration officials, the president goes from quoting the Bible in one breath to obscene tantrums against the media classifies as enemies of the state. Worried White House aides painted a portrait of a man on the edge, increasingly wary of those who disagree with him, and paranoid of a public that no longer trusts his policies in Iraq or at home. One longtime GOP political consultant with contacts in the White House said, "It reminds me of the Nixon days. Everybody's an enemy. Everybody's out to get him. That's the mood over there." This might explain why he's been subpoenaed to speak in the Joe Wilson affair. I mean, it may well be that it was George W. who said, "Fry that guy." Anyhow, in interviews with a number of White House staffers, a picture of an administration under siege has emerged, led by a man who declares his decisions to be God's will and then tells aides to the F word over anyone they consider to be an opponent of the administration. One troubled White House aide said, "We're at war. There's no doubt about it. What I don't know anymore is who the enemy might be. We seem to be spending more time trying to destroy John Kerry than Al-Qaeda, and our enemies list just keeps growing and growing." Aides say the president gets hung up on minor details, micromanaging to the extreme while ignoring the big picture. He will spend hours personally reviewing and approving every attack ad against Kerry and then kiss off a meeting on economic issues. Aides who raise these issues are quickly bounced out of his inner circle. Colin Powell is now sort of on the outside looking in. George Tenet confronted him in a meeting, and he said, according to a White House insider, he said, the president cut him off by saying, "That's it, George. I cannot abide disloyalty. I want your resignation. I want it now." Tenet was, gone the next day. One aide says the president actually described the decision to do away with George Tenet as God's will. Now there's a new book out by a psychiatrist in Washington, D.C. that really makes this stuff scary. Stick around.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed the lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour. One of the folks in our chat room, Wildcat Forever 2004. Get to our chat room, by the way, from tomhartman.com. There's a live chat room while we're on the air, and then 24 hours a day there's a bulletin board, message board, where you can post messages. Anyhow, Wildcat Forever 2004 says, a friend of mine once said that he was pro-life until he saw an interview with one of the leaders of the movement who was asked what they intended to do if they got abortions banned. His response was that they'd then begin to fight to all outlaw birth control. My friend said at that point he switched sides. People forget. It was 1963. You know, they talk about the promiscuous 60s, right? It was 1963, Griswold versus the state of Connecticut, when the Supreme Court ruled that it was no longer, that Connecticut could not no longer make it a felony for a married couple to have condoms in their bedroom. Seriously. Birth control was illegal up until 1963. I mean, it was around, but it was illegal in many states. It was a state-by-state thing. And the Supreme Court in 63 ruled, you can't do that. You know, what people do in the privacy of their own bedrooms is none of the state's business. And, of course, many of the anti-abortion folks are coming out of the Catholic Church, which is online, aggressively online, as being opposed to birth control. Which goes back to the old notion, you know, that whatever religion has the most people ultimately wins, which might have been true 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, but is lousy policy for an era where we have 6 billion humans on the earth and half of them are living on less than $2 a day. Anyhow, we were talking about George Bush and his increasingly erratic behavior. Just to wrap up this article, this was from, you know, a week or two ago by Doug Thompson at Capitol Hill Blue. He says, God may also be the reason Attorney General John Ashcroft, the administration's lightning rod because of his questionable actions that critics argued threatened freedom granted by the Constitution, remains part of the power elite. West Wing staffers call Bush and Ashcroft the Blues Brothers because, quote, they're on a mission from God. The attorney general is tight with the president because of religion, says one aide. They both believe any action is justifiable in the name of God, end quote. But the president, who says he rules at the behest of God, can also tongue-lash those he perceives as disloyal, calling them effing a-holes in front of other staff, berating one cabinet official in front of others, and labeling anyone who disagrees with him unpatriotic or anti-American. The mood here, says one troubled aide, who admits he is looking for work elsewhere, the mood here is that we're under siege. There's no doubt about it. In this administration, you don't have to wear a turban or speak Farsi to be an enemy of the United States. All you have to do is disagree with the president. Tomorrow, a new book will be released by Justin A. Frank, clinical professor of psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center, psychiatrist. It's called Bush on the Couch. As Richard Leiby writes in the Washington Post, we can assure you nobody will be caught reading this book in the White House. In the book, Justin A. Frank, a clinical professor at George Washington University Medical Center, claims President Bush exhibits, quote, sadistic tendencies, end quote, and suffers from, quote, character pathology, including grandiosity and megalomania, viewing himself, America, and God as interchangeable. What should we do about this? Well, Professor Frank says, our sole treatment option for his benefit and for ours is to remove President Bush from office before it's too late. This is a guy who's been in practice for 35 years. He says he began noting Bush's mannerisms in the fall of 2002. Quote, I was really very unsettled by him, and I started watching everything he did and reading what he wrote and watching him on videotape. I felt he was disturbed. In the book, he writes that Bush, quote, fits the profile of a former drinker whose alcoholism has been arrested but not treated. Now, you know, speaking of Bush and God, turns out that while Bush was in the Vatican, this is from the New York Times, he asked the Pope, indirectly, you know, through one of the bishops there, he asked the Pope to help him whip up the wedge issues here in the United States to divert people's attention away from the war in Iraq and the economy. And they didn't deign to respond. Here's what he said. He was speaking on the June 4th to Cardinal Angelo Sodano, the Vatican Secretary of State. Vatican, of course, is a sovereign nation. It's the only member of the United Nations that has no women. The only country that's 100% male. Anyhow, Bush said, quote, this is from Cardinal Sodano, quote, "Not all the American bishops are with me on the cultural issues." And then Sodano said the implication was that he hoped the Vatican would nudge them toward more explicit activism. Cardinal Sodano did not respond, it is reported. The Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Church and State, called the report mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. He said, it is just unprecedented for a president to ask for help from the Vatican to get reelected. For a president to try to get the leader of any religious organization to manipulate his fellow clergymen to support a political candidate crosses the line in this country, says Barry Lynn. The article goes on to point out that it may be that the Pope didn't say, oh, sure, we'll help you out, because the Pope and other Catholic officials have repeatedly criticized the Bush administration over the war in Iraq, not to mention capital punishment. Pope John Paul II praised Mr. Bush for, quote, the promotion of moral values, end quote, but reminded the president of the Pope's, quote, unequivocal position on Iraq. Bet you didn't hear that on Fox News. So, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, Michael Moore's movie is coming out. Interesting stuff. I mean, there's actually a campaign going. I shared in a conservative alert with you last week a little piece of this, but there's actually a campaign going that has, you know, incorporated. I mean, a group has been started to pressure theaters into not running this movie, to censor the movie. Kurt Nemo reports in the Alternative Press Review, so desperate are Bush Republicans to kill Michael Moore's latest film, Fahrenheit 9/11, they hired a PR firm to set up a website attacking Moore. The site, MoveAmericaForward.com, claims to be nonpartisan, but a glance at the About page of the site reveals the director and staff of Move America Forward are all diehard Republicans, anti-tax activists, and former legislative staffers. PR firm is Russo, Marsh, and Rogers. The Move America Forward campaign is a Republican dirty trick designed to smear Moore and pressure movie theaters not to run this film. The website of this group says, Move America Forward, this is the anti-Fahrenheit 9/11 group, says, time is short. We must act now to have our voices heard in time to make a difference. Help us get messages from millions of Americans sent to these film industry executives. Well, the guy who's in charge of this is Doug Lorenz. And if you want to share your opinion with him, his email address is dlorenz, D-L-O-R-E-N-Z, at rmrwest.com. That's Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, the PR firm. Doug Lorenz, dlorenz, L-O-R-E-N-Z, at rmrwest.com. So, you know, if you want to join the cause, if you want to say, okay, I will sign up, I'll contact my local theater and tell them if they run that terrible Michael Moore movie, I will never again set foot in their, or I won't buy their popcorn or whatever. So, well, you know, lots of possibilities here, lots of possibilities. You just never know what's going to happen when people get active. Time for a Rush Limbaugh alert.
Condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
Ah, yes, Rush Limbaugh announces the end of a 10-year marriage. The Limbaughs mutually decided to end their marriage of 10 years and have separated pending an amicable resolution. Now, personally, I figure, you know, the fact that this is his third marriage and it's coming to an end is his own business and none of mine, except for the fact that this is the guy who's on record as saying that gays getting married will hurt the sanctity of the institution of marriage. Three divorces has no negative impact on the sanctity of marriage. But if two gays were to commit themselves for the rest of their lives, that would be a terrible thing. Our Limbaugh alert for the day.
With the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm the fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is...
Yeah, well, we won't go any farther than that. 16 minutes before the hour. A State Department report... I reported on this last week, actually. I mentioned this to you, but now it's made the big time. I mean, this was just a small story that George Bush has been running around at his fundraisers talking about how this last year, just completed, the previous 12 months, had the smallest number of terror attacks in 20 years around the world. And that's proof that his get-tough policy is working. Well, it turns out that the last year actually had the highest number of terror attacks in the last 20 years, which may or may not be proof of something. And Secretary of State Colin Powell had apparently echoed Bush's comments. And once again here, a State Department report that incorrectly showed a decline last year in terrorism worldwide. So this came out of Colin Powell's department, the State Department. Was a, quote, big mistake, end quote, Secretary of State Colin Powell said Sunday. He said he was working with the CIA, which helped to compile the data to determine why the errors got into the report. He's talking to ABC's program this week, and he's trying to say, you know, this has got nothing to do with politics here, even though George is running around waving this at everybody, you know, like red meat, waving it in front of every group that's going to raise, you know, that's going to hand him money. Colin Powell says, quote, it's a numbers error. It's not a political judgment that said, let's see if we can cook the books. We can't get away with that now. That's pretty telling. We can't. Just get this. He says it's a numbers error. It's not a political judgment that said, let's see if we can cook the books. We can't get away with that now. Representative, this verbatim quote from Colin Powell. Well, when could they get away with that? Apparently, leading up to the war in Iraq, obviously. Leading up to each of the three major tax cuts. You know, on and on it goes. Representative Henry Waxman of California, speaking of cooking the books, Waxman has been one of the leaders, one of the guys right out in front. In pointing out every single time the Bush administration tries to cook the books. He has been so good about that. He's got a great website. Good guy. Representative Henry Waxman of California had challenged the findings. You know, I challenged it on the air the other day, but it took a congressman to get Colin Powell to say, oops. And contending, Waxman saying that they were manipulated for political purposes. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to share your thoughts. In just a minute, I've got a touchscreen voting machine update for you. Chuck Hagel's old company, ES&S, up to a few tricks down in Florida. I'm sure you'll be interested to hear about that. But first, let's hear from Dave in Humboldt County. 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, good morning, Tom. I'm trying to see if you're... good analytical mind could try to fathom what must exist within the head of Bush and Cheney. Bush particularly, he must have a really schizophrenic approach. You know, he has to be aware that he's doing everything he can to exploit the poor and the working class, that he is shifting wealth in every way that he can into the pockets of his own cartel there. He has to be aware that...
I disagree, Dave. I disagree. If you go back to the 18th century and you read Darwin's cousin, what was his cousin's name? I'm forgetting right now. Anyhow, he was an economist. Uh-huh. And in some ways, you know, many people suggest that Darwin based his theory of evolution on his cousin's theory of economics. There was this, and Darwin talked about this in his book, The Descent of Man, about their, you know, our superior and inferior persons. And there was this pervasive belief And it carried over to the United States. You know, the Calvinists were the outspoken ones about this, that wealth is a sign of a blessing from God. There was this pervasive belief, and it's been around for 6,000 years as far as I can tell, that the poor are poor because of character defects, and the rich are rich because they are blessed by God, or because they are smarter, or because they're doing the right thing, and so on. And I've listened to enough of George Bush's speeches and seen him respond impromptu to enough things to have come to the conclusion that he and his father, and ultimately Reagan as well, all shared that perspective.
That the poor are poor because of they somehow deserve it. He doesn't say that, but you can read that between the lines.
Well, first of all, it's there in his policies. And, you know, I mean, Reagan was largely responsible for the explosion in homelessness in the United States by cutting off funding for families in dire straits and shutting down mental hospitals, throwing all these people on the streets, and then cutting back on veterans' benefits.
But what he verbalizes is no child left behind. And
they've got good PR firms. I mean, these guys, they know, they test everything with focus groups. They know how to get the votes. They know how to, you know, convince us that that isn't their real agenda. But, you know, I mean, just pay a little attention now that you've been awakened. You pay a little attention, you'll get it. I mean, that is consistent, by the way, historically, with conservative philosophy, all the way back to John Adams and Alexander Hamilton. Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
The
The shipping industry is seeking a balance between fuel efficiency and smokestack exhaust. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Modern ocean-going ships use big diesel engines that are designed to extract the most energy possible out of cheap kinds of fuel. But that high fuel efficiency has an unwelcome cost. These efficient engines produce a surprising amount of air-polluting exhaust. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. He says ships pump out a lot of particulate matter and gases such as nitrogen and sulfur oxides.
By designing very, very large engines that can operate at very high temperatures and very high pressures, they became very efficient at releasing the energy in fuel. Those same high temperatures and pressures also help form high levels of oxides of nitrogen, also help form high levels of particulate matter. And the fact that these engines can run on a fuel that has a very, very high sulfur content makes the sulfur emissions typically high.
Air pollution from ships can be aggravating for people who live near busy shipping lanes and ports where ships take on and unload cargo. But port communities can't do much to address the problem because these ships are usually subject to international law and not to local jurisdictions. Corbett says the shipping industry is working on standard policies to reduce emissions, but there's a hitch. Reducing air pollution might reduce fuel efficiency, too. Some extra energy will be needed to run exhaust treatment systems in the smokestacks. Corbett says air pollution from ships is a problem that people are taking seriously and for good reason. Global trade is expected to double within 20 years, and that's going to mean more ships burning more fuel to carry that commerce from country to country. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We can never go back. So why do I try? Why does the past move closer every time I close my eyes?
You may remember that Chuck Hagel was recruited away from working for George Herbert Walker Bush after about 20 years, more or less, in Washington, D.C., by a company in Nebraska that had been started up by a family that believes the Bible should replace the Constitution in the United States. They're part of a movement that suggests that. And, you know, they helped initially fund the corporation. It doesn't mean the corporation believes that. But the corporation was Election Systems and Software, ultimately. I mean, that's the name of it now. It's been through several different name changes. And Hagel was the president of the company and apparently head salesman. He got the entire state of Nebraska, or most of it, 80% of the people who voted in Nebraska 8 years ago, I believe it was, voted on ES&S machines and or were set to. And he suddenly resigned his job as head of ES&S, presented himself to the people Nebraska. As an investment banker, a businessman, never mentioning the fact that he ran the company that owned the voting machines. And he ran for office for the United States Senate against a popular incumbent Democrat who was expected to easily win. Here's this guy, Chuck Hagel. Nobody had ever heard of him. He'd only lived in the state for a while. And in what the Washington Post called the election upset of the year, out of all the elections all across America, Chuck Hagel won. Now, that's not to say that there was anything, you know, wrong going on there. But here ES&S is now in the news again. And as of a few months ago, he still owns stock in the company, by the way. Touchscreen voting machines in 11 counties. This is from the Associated Press. Tallahassee, Florida. Touchscreen voting machines in 11 counties have a software flaw that could make manual recounts impossible. In November's presidential election, a state spokesman said. A spokeswoman for the Secretary of State called the problems, quote, minor technical hiccups that can be resolved, but critics allege voting officials wrongly certified a voting system they knew had a bug. The machines made by ES&S, Election System Software of Omaha, Nebraska, failed to provide a consistent electronic event log of voting activities. Officials with the company and the State Division of Elections say they believe they can fix the problem by linking the voting equipment to laptop computers. Bring your laptop in when you come to vote in Florida. It's wild times. Florida, America's Banana Republic. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed this lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Excellent news, Americans! U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing or right-shoring to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Arleigh Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program, our number 1-866. It's one of those toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to call in, offer your thoughts, suggestions, ideas, criticisms, complaints, arguments. Retired officials, this in the L.A. Times, this is fascinating. A group of 26 former senior diplomats and military officials, several appointed to key positions by Republican Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, plan to issue a joint statement this week. You know, watch for this. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, number one, if this gets covered in the mainstream media when this actually comes out. And if so, how? But they plan to issue a joint statement this week arguing that George W. Bush has damaged America's national security and should be defeated in November. These are mostly Republicans. It's a group that calls itself Diplomats and Military Commanders for Change. It is clear, one of the group's principal organizers, William C. Harrop, the former ambassador to Israel under President Bush's father, says it is clear that the statement calls for the defeat of the administration. This group includes 20 former U.S. ambassadors to countries from Israel to the Soviet Union to Saudi Arabia. Others are senior State Department officials from the Carter, Reagan, and Clinton administrations, from former military leaders, including retired General Joseph P. Hoare, the former commander of U.S. forces in the Middle East under President Bush's father, and Air Force Chief of Staff Merrill A. McPeak. It is unusual, Ronald Brownstein notes in this article in the Los Angeles Times today, it is unusual for so many former high-level military officials and career diplomats to issue such an overtly political message during a political campaign. But the guys saying this are saying, you know, it's really, this is not a political message. Jack F. Matlock Jr., who was appointed by Reagan as ambassador to the Soviet Union and retained in the post by President Bush's father during the final years of the Cold War, expressed similar views. He said, ever since Franklin Roosevelt, the U.S. has built up alliances in order to amplify its own power. We've said, quote, I'm quoting him, he says, but now we have alienated many of our closest allies. We have alienated their populations. We've all been increasingly appalled at how the relationships that we, you know, speaking on behalf of these diplomats and senior military officials, that we worked so hard to build up have simply been shattered by the current administration in the method it has gone about things. Now, a similar document is going to be released in Great Britain by former, oh, it was released back in April, by in Great Britain by former high-level British diplomats condemning Prime Minister Tony Blair for being too closely aligned to U.S. policy on Iraq. But back to the one that's coming out in the United States next week. The signatory said Kerry's campaign played no role in the formation of their group. Phyllis E. Oakley, the Deputy State Department spokesman during Ronald Reagan's second term and an assistant secretary of state under Clinton, said the campaign had no role whatsoever in organizing the group. The document does not explicitly endorse Kerry. This is not it's not going to be a pro-Kerry screed. It's not even going to mention him. Admiral William J. Crow, Jr., chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Reagan. Retired Admiral Stansfield Turner. He was also the director of Central Intelligence. This guy Matlock, I have to go back and find his first name, said that he voted voted for Reagan in 84 and the Elder Bush twice. Several on the group's list were appointed to their most important posts under Reagan and the Elder Bush. These include Matlock and Horup, as well as Arthur A. Hartman, who served as Reagan's ambassador to the Soviet Union from 1981 to 1987, H. Allen Holmes, an assistant secretary of state under Reagan, and Charles Freeman, ambassador to Saudi Arabia under the Elder Bush. So what caused this? If the Kerry campaign, you know, the cons are going to say, oh, the Kerry campaign got a hold of these guys and they said, we got to go in there and we got to say something, we got to do something, get out there, No, that's not what happened. Matlock said that this group was sparked by conversations among colleagues who had served in senior positions around the same time. You know, these guys, they socialize, they work together in the Foreign Service. They stay in touch. It was sparked by conversations among colleagues who had served in senior positions around the same time, most of them for the Reagan administration and the first Bush administration. They're going to issue a call. Well, the headline of the article that Ron Brownstein wrote, Retired Officials Say Bush Must Go. The subtitle, The 26 ex-diplomats and military leaders say his foreign policy has harmed national security. Several served under Republicans. So, things are changing. Things are changing. Republicans are waking up. to the toxicity of this foreign policy. By the way, we've been on the Talk Radio Network, TRN, talkradionetwork.com is their website, for a couple of weeks now. Talk Radio Network broadcasts on your TV set. Interestingly, you know, if you tune up into the high channels, you find that there are channels where there's just music, there's no picture. And this show is literally on people's TVs from Los Angeles to Maine. And I'm just curious if, I'm sorry, it's called Cable Radio Network, not Talk Radio Network. Thank you, Louise. And I'm just curious, you know, it takes a while for people to figure out that something's there. You know, I mean, it's just a normal thing. And, you know, typically months, sometimes 6 months, sometimes a year, who knows? So if anybody is listening on their TV, now I'm not talking about the Cable Radio Network web stream, which is also on their website, but if you're listening on your TV to this program, give us a call. You don't even have to go on the air if you don't want to, and we'll give you a free copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, my newest book. I'm just curious who's out there. So we'll find out. We've got, where did that go? I had this great, here it is, right here, this absolutely a piggies alert! Yes, the bigger piggies in their starched white shirts. Our piggy alert, Dick Cheney. Cheney's Halliburton alibi crumbles. Revelations in today's Los Angeles Times. This is from Americans Coming Together. Detail Dick Cheney's involvement in Halliburton's receipt of lucrative, no-bid government contracts while allegations of fraud and bribery continue to mount against Cheney's former company. I'm telling you, this is why George Bush is talking to Rudy Giuliani and maybe even to John McCain. Cheney's alibi number one on Meet the Press back on 9/14/03, he said, as vice president, I have no influence. And as vice president, I have absolutely no influence of, involvement of, knowledge in any way, shape, or form of contracts led by the Corps of Engineers or anybody else in the federal government. On Meet the Press, he further said, I don't know of any of the details of the contract. Nobody has produced one single shred of evidence that there's anything wrong or inappropriate here. Nothing but innuendo, and basically, they're cheap political shots is the way I would describe it. I don't know any of the details of the contract because I deliberately stayed away from any information on that, but Halliburton is a fine company. And his number three alibi, also on Meet the Press, that he has no financial interest. Number one, vice president, he has no power. Number two, he didn't know any of the details. Number three, he has no financial interest. He said, and since I left Halliburton to become George Bush's vice president, I've severed all my ties with the company, gotten rid of all my financial interests. I have no financial interest in Halliburton of any kind and haven't had now for over 3 years. Okay? The words of Dick Cheney from his mouth. Meet the Press, 9/14/03. And now, what is the truth? Truth number one. Dick Cheney's office was involved in the $7 billion Halliburton decision. As the Los Angeles Times reported, as did the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on 6/14, Pentagon officials have acknowledged that Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff and other Bush administration political appointees were involved in a decision to pay Houston-based Halliburton to plan for the post-war recovery of Iraq's oil sector. The decision, overruling the recommendation of an Army lawyer, resulted in the award of a $7 billion no-bid contract to Halliburton, which Cheney ran for 5 years before he was nominated for vice president. Truth number two. Remember, he said nothing was coordinated with his office. Time magazine, June 7th of this year, a couple weeks ago. Time has obtained an internal Pentagon email sent by an Army Corps of Engineer official that raises questions about Cheney's arm-length policy toward his old employer. Dated March 5th, 2003, the email says, action on a multi-billion dollar Halliburton contract was coordinated with Cheney's office. Truth number three. Dick Cheney, of course, in his lie number three, had said that he had no continuing financial interest in Halliburton whatsoever. A congressional research report released yesterday concluded that federal ethics laws treat Vice President Cheney's annual deferred compensation checks and unexercised stock options as continuing financial interests in the Halliburton company. This is from the Washington Post. Cheney's three-year take from Halliburton now totals $488,408 plus stock options. As Reuters said, President Dick Cheney received $178,437 last year from Halliburton, the Texas oil field services company he once headed, that has received a multi-billion-dollar government contract in Iraq. Washington Post noted on 9/26/03, Cheney received deferred compensation of $145,579 in 2001 and $162,362 in 2002, with payments scheduled to continue for three more years. And the New York Times noted, Halliburton has agreed to let Mr. Cheney, the Republican vice presidential candidate, retire with a package worth an estimated $20 million, according to people who have reviewed the deal. And now we find investigators, this is from the New York Times, investigators in the United States, France, and Nigeria have been examining accusations that KBR, the Halliburton Engineering and Construction Unit that was formerly called Kellogg, Brown, and Root, was involved in making illegal payments in the 1990s. That's called bribes to win a contract to build a natural gas complex in Nigeria. This, of course, when Dick Cheney was president of the company. French investigators are reported to have uncovered evidence that about $5 million in payments on this Nigerian thing. And there's talk about getting Cheney over there to testify. Pretty amazing stuff. Dick Cheney, our piggy alert for the day. Our little piggy alert for the day. 20 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
We could build thousands of new schools or hire a million new teachers. We could make sure every child has insurance. Instead, under George Bush, America is alone, spending tens of billions to rebuild Iraq with no plan for success. After 3 years, when is George Bush going to start taking care of America? Shouldn't America be a top priority?
Yeah.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's go to the phones here. Billy in Santa Cruz, California is on the line. Hey, Billy, I've got a news story here. I'm wondering how this is playing in California. Enron emails confirmed that Arnold Schwarzenegger was among a small group of executives who met with Ken Lay at the posh Beverly Hills Hotel in May of 2001 in the midst of the California's energy crisis. And the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights, which obtained the emails, is calling on Schwarzenegger to acknowledge the meetings, disclose the information. This occurred 10 days after the rolling blackouts. Is this getting any press coverage out there?
It's not a new piece of news here.
It's not new. It's not new news. Okay.
No, he has acknowledged that he met with Ken Lay, we've never seen the minutes of the meeting, but he claims nothing, of course, happened. But we know, after all, who Ken Lay is and who those people are, and just like they manipulated the power plant opening and closings,
sure,
so they could screw California.
Yeah.
And we've heard the tape on it now.
The grandmothers, yes.
Yeah. If you think that anything different is happening with refineries and the price of gasoline, then you're really a stupid person.
Well, I'm not even sure that they have to cut back on refinery capacity. I mean, you look at the profits of the oil companies, of ExxonMobil, Texaco, and whatnot, and they're all showing larger profits than they have ever shown in history.
They think that because they pay more for their raw material, they make less money. But the fact is that when you're in a business with price flexibility, and I might add, when in fact you sort of all agree on the price together, it used to be called price fixing, now it's just called, testing the dollar. The fact is the more money that's there, the more they can take. It's a question of percentages.
Yeah.
And when you take 20% off the top of $2 a gallon, it's better than $1 a gallon.
Yeah, I think they're just, they're pushing us to see how far we can go on this thing. Because, the oil companies would not be showing these huge, huge, billion-dollar quarterly profits, billion-dollar profits, if that money wasn't coming from the prices at the pump. I mean, it's just that simple. They don't need to manipulate supplies because there's no regulators involved.
You say, the electric people didn't need to manipulate either. The fact is that you and I don't understand the concept of greed as carried out by the people who really benefit from it in a large way.
Well, I think the electric people...
Let me talk about Reagan for a second.
Sure.
It really comes into this.
Okay.
Reagan gets all this credit for lowering the tax used to be like 70% on the richest citizens in America. Well, let me tell you what really happened as a result of that. When it became attractive, you know, as Reagan would point out, you never did more than two movies a year because the government got all the money. Well, that reverts today to what CEOs do. And what they do is, because the tax bill is so low, they are incented to steal and to lie and to take money from their shareholders that normally would have gotten taxed away. So there's the kinds of things that less sophisticated people don't see about the Reagan reality.
Yeah, yeah, and the Reagan legacy. I'd say also, by the way, with regard to the energy, there was still some vestige of electricity regulation, and the state was involved in that. So they really did need to manipulate supplies in California in order to justify the price.
Because the law particularly laid itself out.
Yeah, whereas with regard to gasoline, they don't have to give you any reason why the price you pay at the local gas station is what it is.
And, you know, when Dick Cheney says things like, well, I don't have any connection. Well, first of all, that's a huge lie. But let's also be a little sophisticated. And whatever today is has nothing to say about tomorrow. And it has nothing to say about where my wife went. You know, there's a Texas legislator's wife named Wendy Graham.
Yeah, Phil Graham's wife, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, she went from being a regulator, where she made it easy to steal, and then went to the theft, and then went to work for Enron after she made it easy to steal.
Yeah.
So what? It doesn't matter what they lie about today.
Well, that's,
they can tell the truth today.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree, Billy. And this is where we need to change the rules. We need to get back to democracy of by and for the people, rather than of by and for the corporations.
Thanks. I have a TV show I have to recommend.
Okay, what is it?
Quick. The Casino. It's on tonight. My brother is in it.
Okay.
It's incredibly embarrassing.
We'll look for it. Thanks a lot,
okay.
Billy. Bye bye.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Meat and poultry giant Tyson Foods was cleared of criminal charges last year in a case involving allegations of trafficking in undocumented workers, but an appeals court rules the company can still be held civilly liable. Four employees in Tennessee charged Tyson actively hired undocumented workers in a coordinated campaign to keep wages low in its slaughterhouses and processing plants. The same federal judge who oversaw Tyson's criminal case last year initially dismissed the lawsuit, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the lower judge misapplied the law when he tossed the case.
No contract, no convention. U.S. Marshals have been ordered by a district court judge to watch over the tense labor battle brewing between the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Mayor Thomas Menino, who has so far refused to reach a contract settlement before the upcoming Democratic National Convention on July 26th. Construction of the Fleet Center, where the convention is scheduled to take place, has been delayed for about a week as construction workers and truck drivers have refused to cross city workers' picket lines, posing a huge problem for the Democratic Party, which is counting on labor to get out the vote in November's presidential election. The Democratic Party delegates from Maine have said they will not attend the convention unless the unionists receive a fair contract.
Not a bad way to go to jail. Andrew Wiederhorn will spend the next 18 months in the federal pen for fraud tied to an investment firm he controls, which cost various union pension funds some $350 million. Not only will he keep his job as CEO of Oregon-based Fog Cutter Capital Group, but he'll keep his pay, which works out to about $4,600 a day while behind bars. As a bon voyage present, the firm gave Wiederhorn a $2 million leave of absence bonus, which just so happens to be the exact amount of money he agreed to pay in restitution to pension clients as part of his plea deal for a reduced prison sentence.
The nonpartisan General Accounting Office found the Pentagon wasted millions of taxpayer dollars on unused or improperly claimed airline tickets, more than $100 million in a six-year period between 1997 and 2002. The GAO blames weak internal controls and a, quote, culture of indifference at the Pentagon for the losses.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. American corporations are now investing in information technology at rates comparable to the pinnacle of the turn-of-the-century dot-com bubble, but the money's going into software, not people. According to the Economic Policy Institute, even as IT spending is rising, employment in information technology-related fields has continued a decline begun in late 2001. EPI says part of the disparity is likely due to the offshoring of IT jobs.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Suppresses right, right suppresses left. So what's left and what's right?
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the Chinese have figured it out, even if we haven't. They say, if you want to do business, you multinational corporations, whether you're based in Detroit or Bermuda, you want to do business in China, you got to have a Chinese partner. So that some of that equity, some of that profit stays in China, particularly if you're going to build a factory here and sell things to the Chinese. Why don't we have rules like it? We actually did at one time in the United States have rules like this. It was, you know, I suppose to his credit, it was Ronald Reagan who told Toyota that they couldn't import any more cars unless they built a factory here. But that's, you know, again, that was part of the trade deficit, meaning that they got to buy up America. They didn't have to do a joint partnership with anybody. They didn't have to go to Ford and say, listen, you know, let's split this 50-50. Now, they got to build a factory here and make cars and sell them here and take all the profit back to Japan and chuckle all the way home. But the Chinese know that's stupid. Stupid! It is, of course, the foundation of conservative economic theory. Conservative economic theory. Let the free market decide. Let corporations do whatever they want. But the Chinese and the Japanese and the Thais and a lot of other countries around the world have figured out, you know, this is just not a good plan. I mean, in many ways, we don't have much choice because of Walmart, because we're importing. So Walmart accounts for about 10% of total U.S. imports. We're importing so much stuff and exporting so many dollars, those companies have got to use those dollars to buy something here. So they come in and they buy our companies. And they make stuff. And they take the profits home back to their nation. Well, here's the story here now in the Associated Press today. General Motors, the world's biggest automaker, said it will build new facilities to more than double its manufacturing capability. Now, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, where there was a huge GM plant, Oldsmobile and Cadillac. Are they building it there? No. But they're going to more than double their manufacturing capacity? Where are they going to do this? Well, they're going to do it in China, and they're going to do it with their partner, their Chinese partner, Shanghai Automotive Industry Corp. Phil McMurdo, chairman and CEO of General Motors China Corp., said in a statement, "Success in China is critical to GM's global success. General Motors has invested more than $2 billion in 1998. In joint ventures that now make domestic brands as well as Buick sedans, Chevrolet Blazers, minivans, and other models in these other countries, principally China. $2 billion. Can you imagine if they'd invested $2 billion in the United States? If we had simply set the rules of the game, if our politicians had simply gotten together and said, okay, you want to do business? Cool. No problem. We'd love you doing business. You want to make a profit? We're all in favor of that. But you've got to do it in a way that benefits the U.S. economy and that benefits the American workers so that we can have a strong middle class and we can continue to exist without, like some third world country, being bought up by everybody else in the world. Here's a scary, this, you know, moving along on the topic, a little scary report here. Army records show that the Army transferred 7,551 Stingers to foreign countries. You know what a Stinger is? It's one of these shoulder-mounted surface-to-air rockets that you can use to shoot a jet out of the sky. The Army transferred, nice euphemism, 7,551 Stingers to foreign countries between 82 and 2004. According to the GAO, the actual number was probably at least 8,331. Now comes the kicker. The Department of Defense has no requirement for keeping records on the number and destinations of these Stingers. The article in the San Francisco Chronicle opens a still-secret congressional report detailing the Pentagon's inability to account for all of its Stinger shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles is causing consternation on Capitol Hill. Gee, I would think so. And raises the specter of terrorists using U.S.-made missiles to shoot down U.S. military or civilian airplanes. You know, it was 24 years ago. Back to the economy here. I really think this is worth wrapping up. It was 24 years ago that Ronald Reagan's, you know, winning, charming line, keeping in mind Jimmy Carter had inherited the legacy of the Vietnam War, Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson. Johnson thought he could have guns and butter, he could have the Great Society and fight a war. Nixon just, you know, corporate giveaways to everybody and fight a war. And the result, of course, was predictable of these huge debts. It's, you know, what we're going to see in another year or two. The economy went in the tank. And so, you know, 24 years ago, Ronald Reagan said, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?" Well, that's a good question today, isn't it? Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? As a recent CBS News poll reported, 65% of Americans said the country was on the wrong track. The lowest level in a decade, in conjunction with its cover story on the subject, Mother Jones and American Progress will release a national poll analyzing whether Americans think things have gotten better or worse. We'll keep you up to date on that. There are more people unable to find work today than 4 years ago. 4 years ago, the national unemployment average was 4%. Today it's 5.6. Since the recession began in March of 2001, 2 months after George Walker Bush took office, 1.3 million jobs have disappeared. The growth of wages has also fallen dramatically over the past 4 years. Again, you know, the conservatives are celebrating. Grover Norquist is having a party. Hey, this is great. This is just what we've been working for this. Oh, Greenspan, he's got to be so happy. There's no wage inflation to worry about. The growth in wages fell dramatically over the past 4 years. In 2000... the average weekly wage that year grew by 4.9%. In 2003, it grew by 2%. Adjusted for inflation, that means that wages fell slightly in real terms in 2003 for the first time since 1996. For those who have found the work, the recovery is of questionable value in an upside-down economy where profits have soared, yet families' benefits are nullified by the rapidly rising costs of housing, education, and medical care, all of which jumped at double-digit rates. You wonder, why is the cost of housing going up? Why is the cost of education going up? Why is the cost of medical care going up? Because Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. These organizations are so big, nobody can look over them. And those few regulatory agencies that we have, Bush has put industry people in charge of. And you know, And we wonder, you know, why is it that we have this chickens guarding the hen house phenomena? According to the most recent data from the Census Bureau, this is from the Center for American Progress, for the first time in 13 years, the poverty rate grew 2 years in a row, jumping nearly a percentage point from 2000 to 2002, from 11.3 to 12.1%. The number of poor grew from to 34.6 million people in 2002, including 12.1 million children. Oh, but the conservatives say, we have to move jobs to China to help those people in the third world. The number of poor in the United States went up 1%, a full percent, during Bush's administration. 34.6 million people. Personal bankruptcies are at an all-time high. The Associated Press reports personal bankruptcies rose 2.8% in the 12 months ending March 31st, with 1,618,062 new bankruptcies. 1.5 million. In absolute numbers, of course, there were a lot fewer people alive in 1935, but 33, whatever. But in absolute numbers, that beats the Great Depression. And what is particularly distressing about these bankruptcy numbers is that about half of the people who declare bankruptcy do so because they've been hit with medical bills they can't cover. Oh, but the cons would have you think. They're just lazy. They're just trying to get the easy way out. We need to tighten up the bankruptcy laws. And, of course, gas prices. Americans are paying more for their gas since 2000, according to a report by the Consumer Union, Consumer Federation of America and the Consumers Union. Domestic petroleum companies have stuck U.S. gasoline and natural gas consumers with about $250 billion in price hikes since George Bush took office. $250 billion in price hikes. Since George Bush. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Well, yes and no. Financially, no. Mentally, a whole lot better.
There you go.
Just because I just refused to let them get me down.
There you go.
I was thinking, Tom, and because of your background in history, perhaps you know exactly when this quote was made. I was thinking it was in the late 40s or early 50s. It might have been earlier than that. What's good for GE is good for or General Motors is good for the country.
Yeah, it was Eisenhower's. It was Eisenhower's. I think it was Eisenhower's Secretary of State. I forget his name. I could be wrong.
I was thinking, you know, this Stinger story. You know, that's kind of a negative. But on the flip side of it, that allowed Tom Ridge to get a lot bigger budget for his homeland security because he'll have to protect them against them coming back.
Yeah, assuming they're not already here.
Yeah, and
a lot of people still wondering about Flight 800, you know.
You know, I mentioned to Bernie on Friday, and I just saw a clip that the consumer price report had been delayed due to arithmetical mistakes or something.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it come out.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
I don't, honestly.
Floated out there in the airspace.
If there was a mention of it in this morning's paper or the Wall Street Journal, I missed it. I over the weekend, I didn't have much of an opportunity to read papers, so it may be, but I might have missed it. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is these guys are going to postpone or bury or put bad news into news cycles, you know, like late Friday night, late Saturday night, the next time there's a crisis, the next time there's a big arrest, the next time a whole bunch of people get killed, whatever. That's when they're going to release. You know, I mean, they've been doing this for 3 years. It's
have they ever,
not rocket science.
To your memory, come out with a report that was better at than the initial numbers?
I don't know.
You know, I'm thinking about this thing on the terror numbers. Well, of course, it came out a lot worse, but I don't know that they've ever come back with one that improved
initial.
Well,
you know, it's possible. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, there's thousands of reports, but I don't remember one.
Yeah, I'm not here to say that they're absolutely terrible people and everything they say is lies, blah de blah. It's the reality is that the Clinton administration managed the news cycle too. Nothing at the level of sophistication like the Bush administration, but they did. And
without the cooperation too, Tom, this stuff couldn't happen without cooperation. I don't think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying conspiracy, but it's just, you know, who wants to be the one to really broadcast the bad news? You know, who doesn't want their reporter to be able to get called on at a news conference?
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, during the Clinton administration, Helen Thomas got to sit up front and ask the hard questions, and she continued to, and she, you know, they weren't playing musical chairs with the White House press corps and saying, if you ask a bad question, you're going to the back of the room, as the Bush administration has done. And
I like the, you know, when you were talking about the book that's just coming out, boy, I hope you get that author on, too, but at the tail end of that Capitol Hill Blue report, they said, Scotty, said, well, we just never comment on this stuff, but yet he just recommended Woodward's stroke fluff piece.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
Wait a second, and nobody calls him on the line?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's strange times we live in here.
Yeah.
Strange
anyway,
times we live in, Roy.
Have a great one. We're just going to have to keep on working. We've got a neighborhood house meeting tomorrow night. We're just going to round
That's
up
great.
Some folks. We're going to get a little mental support from everybody, and everybody's going to take on a challenge or two. And
That's great.
This is too important not to.
Have you contacted the local Democratic Party?
Yeah, you know, like Will Rogers said, I'm not a member of an organized party.
have you contacted any of the local unions?
Unions, we have not. That's good.
You might be surprised. You know, a lot of these local unions have, not big budgets, but they've got budgets for local promotion and to do things. And if they've got some concerned citizens, even if you're not a union member,
the opportunity to shake Max McQueland's good hand. Saturday in Rio Rancho.
Oh, you did?
He was out. We had a rally for a local candidate that is running against Heather Wilson. Josh Begeman was there. And it was a nice little turnout for a beautiful Saturday afternoon. There was probably a couple hundred people around. Lots of enthusiasm. Lots of vets.
That's great.
Lots of vets.
That's great.
And I got me a whole bunch of vets for Terry and whatnot. So we just got to keep kidding.
Okay.
Take
yeah.
Care.
Good luck, Roy. Thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The best advice for surviving a rip current at the beach might be go with the flow. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The National Weather Service is one of several organizations that are making a coast-to-coast effort this summer to warn people about rip currents at beaches on the Great Lakes and along the ocean coastline. The campaign is providing simple information about how to survive if you're in the water and find that you're being swept away from shore. Rip currents pull people away from shore and straight out to open water. They often form between a beach and an offshore sandbar. The water that's trapped between the sandbar and the shore eventually has to move back out to open water and will cut an opening in the sandbar to escape. It's the movement of water through that opening that creates the rip current. These currents do not pull people below the surface, but they are very strong. Some people say they're stronger than any Olympic swimmer. If you're caught in a rip current, trying to fight it and swim straight back to shore might be the worst thing you can do. Panic and fatigue are the biggest threat of all to someone who's temporarily caught in one of these situations. Experts say rip currents are actually pretty narrow, and sometimes they're only 30 feet wide. That means you can get out of one by swimming parallel to the beach. Once you get past the edge of the current, you'll be in calmer water, and it will be easier to swim back to shore. If that's not possible, experts say you should float with the current offshore until you reach a break in the waves and the current grows weaker. At that point, you should swim at an angle back to the shoreline. More information on rip currents is available from the U.S. Lifesaving Association, the National Weather Service, and state offices of the National Sea Grant College Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. You know, it used to be in the United States, I mean, when I was a kid, that we considered healthcare to be part of the commons. It's why hospitals had to be nonprofits. Insurance companies, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, whatnot, they were nonprofits. Kaiser Permanente was set up as a nonprofit. Because we wanted their first goal to be to provide healthcare, not to make money. I mean, we didn't want them making decisions based on what's going to affect the bottom line. We wanted them to make decisions based on what's going to make people well. And, of course, the cons looked at that and said, well, this is kind of silly. Paul Wellstone had introduced legislation which harkens back to that era. It's really a remnant of that point of view, that mindset, which said, okay, if we're not going to have national health care, if we're not going to either own or pay for the health care of all of our citizens, and we're not going to require those in the business of providing health care to operate on a not-for-profit basis, but rather we're going to allow them to have these huge profits, then at least we still have to have some small measure of regulation over them. And the one that Wellstone had been working on when he died, in fact, Pete Domenici, the Republican from New Mexico, had co-sponsored the measure. It's called Wellstone Action. Wellstone Action is a group that was formed after Wellstone died, still pushing for this. Was a law that would say, basically, if you're a health insurance company and you offer health coverage, you know, for any part of the body, it has to include the brain. Brain's part of the body. You got to include mental health coverage. I mean, it just makes sense. But Denny Hastert has received $648,000 in health industry PAC money. And since 2002, health insurance companies have made more than $20 million in campaign contributions. Hastert got $648,000. So they just killed this piece of legislation. Friends, we have got to get active and take back this government. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our bumper music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, a national Apple dealer. Check them out. Thanks to Mike Toth for our archives and to Ben for the archives of White Rose Society. Thanks to the folks in our chat room. Thanks to Jay for composing and performing our music. And thanks to you for showing up.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a...